So a couple weeks ago was Christmas in the Mansion. You know that I am in a very proud alum of Laurelton Hall in Milford. And I ran into one of my former classmates, Miss Amanda. And what's interesting about Amanda is I think, Amanda, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you were a grade ahead of me. I think you're a grade up from me, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's 07. Yes. Okay. And so, but Amanda's mom was my Spanish teacher for 2 years. And so, I got to know Amanda, you know, through my teacher, but then in our adult life, we keep running into each other. And for a little bit, she was like, I'm writing this book and telling me about it. And I thought, all right, well, when the book is done, you got to come on the show. And there she is at Christmas in the Mansion last week, selling her book to all the visitors. And I thought, all right, well, you're due to come on my show. You told me you would. So Amanda is here this morning, Amanda Motola, and I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for your time. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me. Super excited to be embarking on this new journey and chapter of my life.
Yeah, no pun intended. So tell me a little bit. Is this your first book?
Yeah, so this is my first book. I was published when I was in seventh grade, a poem about my adoption. So it was only fitting that my first book included little pieces of my adoption and finding my biological family, which some people listening might have actually helped me with that journey several years ago when I traveled down to South America.
That's amazing. So tell us about your journey before we dive into your book and what made you want to really reflect on what you went through and maybe be able to connect with other adoptees.
Yeah, of course. So I was born at the tail end of a dictatorship in Asunción, Paraguay. 2 weeks after I was born, the dictator was removed by his general and exiled to Brazil. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of corruption that ensued, you know, post-dictatorship. And there was a lot of trafficking of babies. And I allegedly was one of those babies, and I ended up in the United States. And it has been a blessing in so many ways, from opportunities to, you know, even this book. I wouldn't have done it if I was down there. I saw how poor my family was back in 2015. And when you're poor down there, you die poor. There's really no helping hands, unfortunately.
What was that like? First of all, I understand only to a certain extent, and I think when people can accept that, unless you've gone through that journey, we'll never fully understand. My husband was adopted. Now, he was adopted by his grandparents I think just before he turned two, because of a very messy family situation, mm-hmm. a lot of instability. But even that idea of wanting to really know your biological parents and the story of how you ended up where you are today, you know, I remember early on in our relationship, I thought you've got a loving family, you've got everything you need, you're going to college without any debt. Like, what's the problem? And he's like, you'll never understand it. Help people to understand just wanting to know that chapter of your life, especially when you paint a picture like you did. You know, the need to go back and to really discover the roots of you know where you came from.
Yeah, so I think that in order to move forward in your life, you have to resolve any like past trauma or things that are just weighing on you. And I had this constant void in my heart. And I do have an amazing family. If they're listening, love you guys.
I love them too. They're wonderful.
Yeah, they sure are. And, you know, I always felt guilty really expressing how I felt when I was growing up, especially like the middle school years, right? Because that's like a wonky time for anyone, figuring out who they are and why they're here. And there's just a lot of identity crisis going on with like puberty and everything. So you throw in adoption, and it's just like a totally different animal. And you're right, you can't relate if you haven't walked that path. But the only way I can describe it is just a, you know, ever-present void that you just wonder, like, what if, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for me, I needed to fill that void and at least attempt to find them and have some sort of closure, because I always thought I was unwanted. I always thought my birth mom just gave me up and I was just no big deal, like an afterthought. Mm-hmm. And to find out that that wasn't the case, I felt a little silly thinking that most of my life up until like 25, and being able to see that she didn't even know I was alive was just mind blowing. Right now that I'm a mom and you're a mom as well, you know, if I had been told that my baby had died in childbirth, and then 25 years later, my baby walks into my life and just says, "Hey, I'm here."
I can't even imagine that. That's so true. That's so true. So is that what happened to you, Amanda?
Yeah.
You found your parents and they didn't even think you existed and they thought you were gone. Wow.
Yep, and I met 5 younger siblings, 9 aunts and uncles in 3 different countries. So it's just a wild experience. It made the world incredibly smaller.
What
and
is
it really is a little bit of a premise for this book because I've learned that I'm only 33, so I'm not, you know, I have a lot more learning to do, but I've learned that we're so interconnected. Mm. And that's really, you know, why I felt so compelled to get this done so fast, because from my experiences and seeing all the struggling, hurt people out there, especially from the pandemic, I think it exacerbated just people's feelings and those that had struggles or those voids in their hearts, whether it's from adoption, you know, substance abuse in their family, whatever the case may be, we all have so much more in common than we realize, because we get so caught up in social media and our day-to-day life. We put the blinders up, and my hope is that through my words, people can slow down a bit, maybe smell the roses and just be a little bit kinder to each other, because we all have stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, that we should just do that anyways. Oh, my gosh. No matter what your background is. Good Lord. We need more of that. More love, less hate, and just slowing down a little bit. And Amanda, what, if you don't mind me asking, we are going to take a quick break and we'll come right back. But what was that like to finally see the reality you came from? And in that, as you mentioned, that's sort of what it was even 20 years ago, that it really hadn't changed. And sort of that idea of like, this is who my family was. And this is what I could have been. Like, what was that like for you?
That was really overwhelming. And to be honest, I think I'm still processing it a little bit, even though it's been several years. It felt surreal. I got there and we met my aunt, and I didn't even need to do any DNA tests because I just knew. I've never seen someone that looks just like me in my entire life. So to, you know, meet someone and like embrace them and have like the same toes, it was just crazy. DNA is wild. So it was quite overwhelming. And then meanwhile, while this was going on, there's chickens and horses walking around in the streets, and it's like a dirt road, and they have like a dirt floor in their home. So it was just bizarre is the only way I can describe it, because, you know, I've lived a pretty privileged life overall. And, you know, seeing what I was, where I was born into, and I can't even imagine what the struggle was like during, you know, the dictatorship. And, you know, Strasser wasn't the best guy. So.
Right. That's what it's all about, isn't it? That's what it's always been about. Girl. Girl. Gift, 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 gift. You want to know what happens to your gifts? They all come to me. In your garbage. You see what I'm saying? In your garbage!
I don't know, Mr. Grinch. I don't think these gifts are ending up in your garbage. I just don't think they're coming at all. So we're talking about buying your gifts or doing any of your shopping off of your social media platforms. I was so glad that Krista Carnes brought this topic up, because sometimes I feel like maybe if I get an expert on the show, people in my family will listen. Krista, good morning. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. I hope you are too.
I am. You know, there's a standing joke right now at my husband's office, which my husband works at our family business. My dad owns a brokerage, and my brother works there, and my brother-in-law and my husband all work there. And they've got a standing joke right now. My brother found this incredible deal on social media. It was 3 massive inflatable Christmas decoration things for his yard, all lit up, everything like that, for like $30. And my husband's like, "You're crazy. We have a 5-foot small inflatable thing in our front yard that was like $59.99. There's absolutely no way you're getting that for $30. That is a scam." Well, my brother ordered it. And he ordered it in the beginning of November, and it still hasn't come. And he goes, "Well, I got a tracking number." I'm like, "Yeah, that, I don't even know if that means anything is really coming, my brother." So, and this is not the first time I've known family, friends, other people who will see ads pop up on their Facebook page or Instagram or whatever it may be, and they order. And either they don't get it, or they get something that was not promised to them, or it looks nothing like what was advertised. Tell us what's happening here. We know scammers are sometimes using these social media platforms to dupe people.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of different aspects to it. I mean, we're all kind of, like, so many people of so many backgrounds are like in like sort of that holiday gift giving mode right now, right? And then and the pressures of time, and we have to get things fast, and they're just taking advantage. You know, they're using the algorithms that are there to, you know, to serve you things that, you know, match what you've searched for, or, you know, in some cases, you know, more like some of the bigger retailers and stuff, they can pay for data to know that you're shopping for an e-bike or, you know, whatever it is. And that's why you start seeing more ads of similar items that, you know, that you've been researching. I think with the social media, especially because, I mean, it's just such a worldwide platform, right? Mm-hmm. So they, you know, anybody can create a profile. It's easy. And for $30 or so, there's very little recourse that you're going to be able to take if you make a purchase and it doesn't arrive, right? Or if it's coming on a container ship from Florida, I mean, from China or something. I mean, your brother may end up getting those inflatables and they may turn out to be, you know, a foot tall, and they'll come in March.
Exactly.
You know, and so there is an element of, you know, faith here. But I think it just speaks to the larger thing about being a smart consumer. And some of the really problematic stuff is when you know, it's people that are fishing for your private information. And I think that's a little different. I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but like I was shopping, I was ready to like invest in some really nice sunglasses. I was so excited. And, you know, I knew the brand I was looking for. And for, you know, I looked on the wrong, whatever happened, I ended up getting an email, and this was just email, so it wasn't even social, but I had been searching on social, which probably, you know, gave it off,
triggered
gave it away,
yeah.
And, oh, we're having 70% off on this brand, which are never on sale, right? Like, that's just
right,
part of what
unheard
they do.
Of.
And I was just excited, and as soon as I put my credit card in through PayPal, I get back, you know, a receipt from some Chinese company, all in Chinese. And they were legitimately going to send me something and probably knock off, you know, fine. But I was able, and in that case, I was able to cancel it through PayPal. But it was like such a stress.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think first off, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? I think that's one of the big things. But the other thing that's really troubling about this, Krista, is that there are a lot of credible places on your social media platforms. Like, there are a lot of shopping ads that are legit and they do actually offer good discounts, but unfortunately there are too many bad ones mixed in there, and I think that's where, you know, maybe a few years ago it would have been okay to click on those ads. I know I used to click on those ads. I still will do it from time to time with Instagram, but you like you were kind of saying, you have to be able to spot if something is real or not, and maybe that's where you go and you check the site directly. Like, if you're getting a crazy deal from UGG, go to UGG's website. I would imagine the discount would be there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of tips and stuff too. Like, you know, just even Googling the name of the company, is such and such legit? And often you'll find, you know, Better Business Bureau and certain like consumer minded organizations are someone's keeping track of that stuff. I found a new website that had a lot of, you know, they had a lot of discontinued things. And so they were offering like amazing deals on things that were pretty basic, socks and this, that, and the other. And I was able to Google them and confirm that they are indeed legitimate. And my experience proved that out. So, you know, researching the source, but also looking at things like, especially if it's trying to, if it's a dupe of a major brand, like, look at if it's an email or when you go to the website, is the spelling right? Is there major, you know, typos, or does it just feel off? Because that's usually an indicator. If a text message comes over your phone with a link, absolutely do not click it unless you've signed up on a website, because that's when you get into the phishing where people are going to trying to get into your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to sell you something, but to like mine your information and, you know, potentially, you know, do you know, get access to your personal and financial information. So, you know, there are usually a lot of tip offs. I think email is a big, you know, sometimes an easier way to sort of an easier example of what to look at. But especially, you know, when you start searching for one thing and then all of a sudden these brands you've never heard of show up, you really got to dig down and resist the urge to just buy it. Yeah. And especially if there's like, oh, it's only 15 minutes. Like, you have this special deal for 15 minutes. That's usually an indicator, I think, of a problematic transaction.
Right. Because if a company wants to make money, trust me, they're not going to say in 15 minutes you lost out, because that means they're losing money as well. We're talking.
Yeah, I think this is. Well, we're all shopping online, right? And we're all shopping through our phones. And I am getting, and like this, so the article I sent you to talk about this thing was talking about how even before the pandemic, the trend was that we were, you know, finding gift ideas for, you know, things that, you know, clothes and jewelry and shoes and things that you like to see other people models wear. And, you know, you kind of get excited. I don't think it's the same for tools or, you know, like some, because it's not as aspirational, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and then with the pandemic, I think a lot more people got used to ordering that way.
Oh, sure. I think more Americans became victim to this. Recent studies show about 47% of Americans have already been victimized by social media shopping scams. And in the study, 37% of the surveyed people show that if they're a social media user, they've been victims of phishing link scams. And they've been fallen to victim of these gift card scams. Other non-shopping ones are like the job scams, the advertising scams, hacked accounts, investment scams. I mean, we talk a lot about scams on this show. I have to be honest, Krista. I'm known for talking about scams and fentanyl, which is really nothing I want to go down in the record books for. But those are the two things I feel like I talk about on a weekly basis on this show. So it's not surprising. The question I have for you, especially as our social media consultant, is if you're a business, especially an entrepreneur, and you know that social media is kind of the way of the world right now. A lot of people are looking to either advertise or to maximize their viewings using social media. So in the climate of all the scams being inundated on people, how do you rise above it? Like, how do you still come out credible using an advertising platform, if that makes sense, for your business, which is clean, is reputable, when you've got so many scammers who are kind of mixing in? Like, would you recommend people to pull away from social media, or how can they kind of separate from the pack a little bit?
Oh, I don't know that you'd be doing yourself a service to step away. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the challenge is that some of, you know, whoever is behind a lot of these scammers has a lot of money to buy the information that they need to reach the mass that they do, right? And if it didn't work, they wouldn't keep doing it. So
right.
I don't know, you know, if it's 47% at some point in their lives. I mean, this is millions and millions and millions and millions and billions of messages, you know, every day. And, you know, they are looking. And I think this kind of, you know, disreputable behavior has been happening long before social media, right? There were
True.
By mail, they would do it. When my grandmother was aging, you'd be amazed at the kind of things people were mailing her to try to get her to write a check for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as an entrepreneur, I think you have to be willing to invest in doing it well and doing it right. And, you know, you can keep it limited, like, especially, I mean, if you're a brick and mortar store and that's the, you know, and you have very little, you know, if you don't do e-commerce, it's only really just letting people know where you are and to come and visit you. So that's more just like advertising. If you're going to, you know, create an online shop or be able to sell online, I think you have to research the platforms that are available to you that have a lot of safeguards in place, that have a lot of vetting, that, you know, that can protect your consumers in the event of something. And that takes some money. So you have to, there's like some analysis you have to do as to, you know, how much is it worth investing versus what you return. It potentially, even for a local business, it could open up sales worldwide, right? I mean, theoretically. So what are you going to also do to drive people to your social media presences or your online shop in order to, you know, make that valuable to, you know, to you as an owner. So it's sort of leveling up, right? It's next level business, but with the right kind of product. And if, you know, with, you know, depending on what you're trying to sell, I think it could be really, really effective. But it's a long game, right? It's a long game. You have to make sure you have fulfillment, and there's a lot of services that are offering, that sort of back end, those back-end services, which you'll pay a percentage of, but you like takes the headache out of having to ship things and having to, have inventory and things of that nature. So depending on the nature of your business, if you're an Etsy shop, Etsy is a great example. I mean, most of the people on making handmade items are just small, little probably home or small workshop-based businesses, and Etsy provides all the resources to allow you to get customers from anywhere, as you want. But they do take a piece of the action. I think by and large, most retailers out there are pretty genuine. It's the ones that just the ones that should raise alarm bells to me are the ones that just hammer home.
Yeah, exactly.
The big retailers will, because you've made a purchase and you know. But, get in the habit of, saying stop on those text threads. You sign up for the 20% discount, so you get on the mobile list. And then as soon as you use your coupon, just say stop.
That's a good
idea.
Pay
attention to what information you're giving, because, we want our deals. They want our, they want to know who we are. That's what you're exchanging. And you get your 20% discount. But you can get off lists. Too. So make a habit of, at the end of this season, maybe go through your emails of everything you signed up for and unsubscribe.
That's very true.
And that, to sort of free yourself from the onslaught of after Christmas sales.
It's so true. And you know what, Krista, I hate to say it, but a lot of people will take those deals obviously during the holiday season, but then you see another influx right after, I feel like the day after Christmas, even the day after New Year's, and it's like, hey, all those items, just so you're ready for next year's, Christmas decor,
yeah,
and things like that, you'll see even crazier discounts and people go shopping frenzy, crazy, wild, whoa.
That some people think that's part of the holiday fun, you do you. I think the other thing you have to realize, and if you pay attention, you'll start to see it more, is every time you sign up for an email, every time you sign up for a text, by giving them that information, mm-hmm, they are able to, what's called, retarget you with online,
exactly,
advertising.
They've got you.
So you'll see
They've
it.
Gotcha. Yeah,
they got
it's,
you.
It's very true.
I mean, I'd rather serve up stuff that I know that I'm going to like than something random, maybe.
True. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point, Krista. But it's definitely something to think about. And really, like you were saying, being focused, don't aimlessly click things. And just because something sounds really great, that should, if anything, it should make you feel like, that just doesn't always exist in the shopping world. So be mindful
and
of that.
And your kids, too, because my kids are in this thing like, oh, my God, if I don't get this right now,
yes,
it's going to go away forever.
You're
and I'm
right.
Like, no, that's just not how the world works.
Yes,
you're
right. No, you know what? It's good. It's good to have those conversations with your kids as well. Krista Karns, our social media consultant, always appreciate getting your feedback. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye, Melissa.
Bye. Oh, have a Merry Christmas. I'll talk to you after Christmas.
Yeah, you too.
Yes, have a wonderful Christmas with your family. I will talk to you soon. Krista Karns, our social media consultant here on W.
Melissa in the Morning talks with career strategist and workplace expert Julie Bauke. It's Julie on the Job. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
I think there's something we all can agree on, which is that the pandemic really put a lot of workers into what's called worker burnout, where you feel like you are being pulled in a million different directions. You feel like you just can't take it anymore. But this might have been a little too excessive, and I say that a little sarcastically. An Olive Garden restaurant manager is out of a job for threatening workers for taking time off, saying anyone who's sick or even have pets who have died need to come to us and prove it. Julie Bauke, I can imagine you have some thoughts on this letter to employees. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah. Her frustration obviously got the best of her. And as you said, everyone is really frustrated. This lady was frustrated that her staff kept calling off, like, constantly, and every time it happened, it fell on her. Now, separately, we are also, it seems like everybody I know is sick with something. And there's just a lot of crud going around this year. And she clearly wrote it, sent it, without really thinking about how it was going to be received on
totally.
The other end.
Mm-hmm.
And she, when she said, I mean, let's defend her for a minute here. When she said, if your pet dies, bring it in and show it to us. That's not really what she wanted.
I think this woman was venting. I think that it's like one of those times. And you know what? I have to be honest, Julie. Growing up, I was always told if you've got something, you know, bad to say or you have bad feelings, write them down, right? So I'd have a journal and I'd write them down. But I always got nervous of doing that because I thought, well, what if someone finds this journal? So I just burned the whole thing. Because I was like, you know what?
That's not even worth it.
Right?
That's exactly why I don't journal.
Right. I think about even if you're having a problem with your parents, like if I wrote something down where I'm like, my mom did it. I'm like, what? My mom could clean my room and find this tomorrow. Like, this ain't worth it. So I'm just throwing the whole thing out. So I feel like
I think a better strategy is write the email and then set it aside and sleep on it. You know, run it past someone, kind of try to read it from the receiver's perspective.
Mm.
And so, you know, she said, you know, sort of like back in my day, I came to work even if I was sick. And of course, as someone who works in a restaurant, as a customer, you're thinking, ew, don't sneeze on my breadsticks. You know, I mean, so we don't really want people who are sick at work.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand her frustration, but she handled it the wrong way. And this gets to, were people sick or is she just, she's dealing with a different generational attitude about work.
That's what I think it
is.
I really do think that's what it is. I think, and we've talked about on this show before, Julie, where there are moments where generations will clash. I remember when Connecticut last year put into place the Connecticut paid leave, and I had a friend who just had a baby in the spring, and he took his 2 months of paternity leave. His work was so brutal to the point that he had been with this company for over 5 years. So he'd been with them. He was up for a promotion. When he returned after his paternity leave, he was passed over for that promotion. He quit. I mean, he was like, I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to disrespect the fact that I have a right as a father now to take time off and you have to pay me for that, I'm leaving. But again, you had somebody who was running the company who's like, I had 5 kids. I never took paternity leave. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah, like that.
And you probably
There's
had a stay-at-home wife who took care of everything. And if you, Mr. CEO, who never took a day off, hadn't had 5 kids, if you had to stay home and take care of those 5 kids, you'd probably crumble.
Right.
You know, so it's this is one of those, there are, as I always say, there's bad behavior on both sides. And look at the recent rail workers issue. They were fighting for 7 days of paid sick days per year.
Mm-hmm.
And people had a problem with that. And I have a problem with people having a problem with that. That's ridiculous because we've got to find, there has to be something in the middle. And who knows what this lady was dealing with when, you know, she probably customers who were mad because they couldn't get seated, because they couldn't get waited on, and people calling off. And she said, you got to prove it to me. Now that harkens back to, I remember, and you may or may not, Melissa, but there was a day when you had to bring a doctor's note in if you were sick, if you missed more than a day.
Yes, 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 I remember. Well, I mean, that was even something not that long ago. I mean, I remember getting shingles in the mid-2010s at my first TV job. I got shingles and I had to leave because I was like, what the heck is going on with my neck? Something's happening. I was only 23 and I'm like, I gotta go. I gotta go figure out what's going on. And I remember like my newsroom saw me because I was in a panic. I'm like, does anyone see that my neck is like deformed? I mean, it was crazy. And and that next day, even though I called my news director, he was like, I need a note saying that you have shingles and you can't come back on the air for a week. I mean, and it wasn't, I feel like it was protocol. It wasn't him being a jerk. It was him being like, hey, I saw need that doctor's note to show me that you know, whatever, to justify the sick time. So that I feel like is even kind of new still. That was still something I was doing, I feel like, when I first entered the workforce like 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I've had shingles, so I get it, sister. It's,
it's
horrific.
It's horrible.
But, you know, also think about it. Like, who can afford, because a lot of times healthcare is so expensive. So I go to the doctor and I pay, you know, $50 for my copay, I may or may not be able to get in. I mean, do the doctors really want to see you for a cold? So many aspects of that have changed. And so we've gone to sort of this trust-based system that says you get X number of days per year off. And some companies have combined the PTO and vacation and sick all together. And so if your people are simply taking the days they've been allotted, you really don't want to be in the position of evaluating whether they are sick or not. I mean, mm-hmm. really, just does this lady have time to judge everyone? Can you really come in? I mean, that starts treading into some dangerous territory.
It does. This was a national story last week where an Olive Garden manager sent out an email to the employees, basically calling them out for everyone calling out sick. And I do think, Julie, without knowing really the situation, and I don't like to judge people or anything, but I think when you look at the climate of what people have gone through in these past couple of years, especially in the restaurant industry, we know that people are hurting to fill jobs. We know that people are burnt out. We know that people are being overworked, working way beyond the hours they're supposed to and way beyond the days they're supposed to. So this could very well be a situation where, like you mentioned, somebody is just has had it. And I can understand that. Absolutely. I could sympathize with that. But it also could be, like you said, that there's been a lot of changes in these last couple of years with the way the workplace is and how we're recognizing, you know, the rights of workers. So I do think that could be a combination of things. I do want to ask this, though, because with a shift in how the workplace is. Do you find, though, that there is a lack of respect when you're taking time off? So, for example, my intern is in here this morning, Isabella. She says to me, Melissa, if you had to take a day off, how does that work? How does that work if you're sick? Like, what do you do? What happens when you do the whole show by yourself? What happens? I said, well, I kind of have to give my employers enough of a heads up to get a fill-in, which would mean 7 o'clock at the latest the day before. But if I get sick in the overnight hours, I have what's called pre-records. I have 5 hours worth of interviews that are recent enough that we could replay them the next morning until we could figure out a more long-term solution. And she said, okay, but what if you didn't save stuff? I said, well, then that kind of makes me a jerk. Like, that kind of makes me a not a great employee, if you know what I'm getting at. So my question here, Julie, is with this shift, do you feel like, though, we are lacking a little bit of respect, maybe not with this situation, but where you are also being aware of other people? Like, hey, you know, letting people know I am planning to take 2 months off because I'm having a baby in 6 months versus like, oh, hey, by the way, my wife is due next week. I'm going to be taking 2 months off. Do you see what I'm saying? The two difference there?
Yeah, I do. I think when you look at any workplace situation, if you want, one of the marks of a great employee is the ability to communicate, keep their teammates posted, consider possible outcomes, and consider how what you do or don't do affects those around you. And I do think we've lost some of that. Mm-hmm. I think there's much more of a me, me, me. Well, you know, I'm just going to call it. I don't feel like getting up tomorrow. I was up late last night. I could go in, but meh. You know, it's we've all had those moments, but then sometimes some of us go, yeah, I know, but that's going to leave these people that I care about and that, you know, that do work hard, it's going to keep them, it's going to cause problems for them. I guess I can drag myself to work. I mean, we all have had those conversations in our head, but it seems like we have lost that a little bit. And sort of a, well, I'm just going to come back tomorrow and they'll figure it out without me. And, you know, you are then someday going to be on the other end of that, where
yes,
one of your coworkers calls out,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to recognize what doing stuff like that does. And, you know, the thing is, I don't care whether you are working at an Olive Garden to get through college or you are working there because you want it to be your life's work. If you commit to taking a paycheck, I believe you commit to doing your best, to showing up and doing your best. And there is, you know, after you've been around for a while, you realize the world has a long memory. If you are a crappy employee at Olive Garden and at McDonald's, then you are not building good work ethic or good work skills. So when you do get a job you quote-unquote care about, you have not built those good work ethic muscles. And the world is so connected now that if you are a crappy employee at Olive Garden and McDonald's, it is not a stretch. If I'm looking to hire you for an internship and I happen to know somebody who owns that particular Olive Garden or who's the manager of that Olive Garden, for me to call them and say, hey, we're looking to hire Amber, tell me what you know. Well, let me tell you about Amber. And those conversations go on because we're so connected. I might be friends on Facebook or follow somebody on Instagram who works at that Olive Garden. And from an employer standpoint, I'm looking to hire really good people. And I'm going to do everything I can to find out if you are really good people before I hire you. And so if you were a crappy employee in two jobs and I talked to you about it and you say, yeah, well, you know, those were just jobs to get my way through college, I'm going to work really hard for you. Why would I believe that?
Right.
Past behavior is the best indicator of future behavior. And it comes to employment as well. So when you show up and develop a good reputation, you are opening doors for yourself without even knowing about it.
That's so true. And Julie Balke, she very much is qualified for the subject we're talking about this morning. Founder and chief career strategist at the Balke Group. And of course, she is our career strategist here on WICC. Julie, I really appreciate this topic and for you weighing in on it, because I do think, as you mentioned, there are some things that you could take away from it. But the overarching statement here is that we've got, and we've talked about this a lot, mixed generations clashing sometimes. And we got to figure out how to find a middle ground, but on both sides,
yeah.
On both ends.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we've
exactly.
got to find a middle ground. Good Lord.
Yeah.
All right, Julie.
Good Lord.
Thank you. Good Lord is right. Thank you so much, Julie. Always a
Take
pleasure.
Care. All right. Talk you to too. Us. Bye.
Thank you. Julie Balke here on WICC.